Clearly no use in arguing the point further. Not now, anyway.
Yes, sir.
He hesitated.
Sabaoth will also want to know about Organa Solo.
Thrawn's eyes glittered, but the annoyance, Pellion knew, wasn't directed at him. You will tell Master Sabaoth that I've decided to allow the Nogri one last chance to find and capture her. When we've finished here, I'll be taking that message to them. Personally. Pellion glanced back at the entrance to the bridge, where the Nogri bodyguard Rook stood his usual silent vigil.
You're calling a convocate of the Nogri commandos?
He asked, suppressing a shiver. He'd been to one such mass meeting once, and facing a whole roomful of those quiet, gray-skinned killers was not an experience he was anxious to repeat.
I think matters have gone beyond simply calling a convocate, Thrawn said coldly. You'll instruct navigation to prepare a course from the rendezvous point to the Honegger system. The entire Nogri populace, I think, needs to be reminded of who it is they serve.
He shifted his glare out the viewport at the battle and tapped his board.
Tie Command, recall all fighters to the ship, he ordered. Navigation, begin calculations for a return to the rendezvous point.
Pellion frowned out the viewport. The modified bulk cruiser and backup frigate were pretty much dead where they lay, but the convoy itself was largely undamaged.
We're letting them go.
There's no need to destroy them, Thrawn said. Stripping them of their defense is an adequate object lesson for the moment.
He tapped a key, and a tactical hollow of this section of the galaxy appeared between their two stations. Blue lines marked the Rebellion's main trade routes, those sheathed in red marked ones the Imperial forces had hit in the past month.
There's more to these attacks than simple harassment, Captain. Once this group has told their story, all future convoys from Sarka will demand upgraded protection. Enough such attacks, and the Rebellion will face the choice of either tying up large numbers of its ships with escort duty, or effectively abandoning cargo shipment through these border sectors. Either way, it will put them at a serious disadvantage when we launch the Mount Tantis campaign. He smiled grimly.
Economics and psychology, Captain. For now, the more civilian survivors there are to spread the tale of Imperial power, the better. There will be time enough for destruction later.
He glanced at his board, looking back out the viewport.
Speaking of Imperial power, any news on our ship hunt?
We've had 5 more capital ships turned into various Imperial bases in the past 10 hours,
Pellion told him.
Nothing larger than an old star galleon, but it's a start.
We're going to need more than just a start, Captain,
Thrawn said, craning his neck slightly to watch the returning TIE interceptors.
Any word on Talon Card?
Nothing since that tip from Rishi,
Pellion told him, tapping the proper log for an update.
The bounty hunter who sent it was killed shortly afterward.
Keep up the pressure, Thrawn ordered. Card knows a great deal about what happens in this galaxy. If there are any capital ships lying unused out there, he'll know where they are.
Personally, Pellion thought it pretty unlikely that a mere smuggler, even one with Card's connections, would have better information sources than the vast Imperial Intelligence Network. But he'd also dismissed the possibility that Card might be hiding Luke Skywalker out at that base on Merkur. Card was turning out to be full of surprises.
There are a lot of people out there hunting for him,
he told the Grand Admiral.
Sooner or later, one of them will find him.
Good.
Thrawn glanced around the bridge.
In the meantime, all units will continue their assigned harassment of the Rebellion.
His glowing red eyes bored into Pellion's face.
And they will continue, too, to maintain a watch for the Millennium Falcon and the Lady Luck. After the Nogri have been properly primed for their task, I want their prey to be ready for them.
Sabaoth awakened suddenly, his black-edged dreams giving way to the sudden realization that someone was approaching. For a moment he lay there in the darkness, his long white beard scratching gently against his chest as he breathed. his mind reaching out through the forest to track along the road from the high castle to the cluster of villages at the base of the Rim Mountains. It was hard to concentrate. So very hard. But with a perverse grimness, he ignored the fatigue-driven pain and kept at it. There. No. There. A lone man riding a Cretan thumper, laboring over one of the steeper sections of the roadway. Most likely a messenger, come to bring him some news from the villagers below. Something trifling, no doubt, but something that they felt their new master should know. Master. The word echoed through Sabaoth's mind, sparking a wind-blown tangle of thoughts and feelings. The Imperials who pleaded for him to help them fight their battles, they called him Master too. So would the people of Wayland, whose lives he had been content to rule before Grand Admiral Thrawn and his promise of Jedi followers had lured him away. The people of Wayland had meant it. The people here on Jomark weren't quite sure yet whether they did or not. The Imperials didn't mean it at all. Sabaoth felt his lip twist in disgust. No, they most certainly did not. They made him fight their battles for them, drove him by their disbelief to do things he hadn't attempted for years and years. And then, when he'd succeeded in doing the impossible, they still held tightly to their private contempt for him, hiding it behind those Isl-Mari creatures and the strange empty spaces they somehow created in the Force. But he knew. He'd seen the sideways looks among the officers, and the brief but muttered discussions between them. He'd felt the edginess of the crew, submitting by Imperial order to his influence on their combat skills, but clearly disliking the very thought of it. And he'd watched Captain Aben sit there in his command chair on the Bellicose, shouting and blaspheming at him, even while calling him Master. Spitting anger and impotent rage, as Sabaoth calmly inflicted his punishment on the rebel ship that had dared to strike at his ship. The messenger below was approaching the High Castle gate now. Reaching up with the Force to call his robe to him, Sabaoth got out of bed, feeling a brief rush of vertigo as he stood erect. Yes, it had been difficult, that business of taking command of the Bellicose's turbolaser crews for the few seconds it had required to annihilate that rebel ship. It had gone beyond any previous stretch of concentration and control, and the mental aches he was feeling now were the payment for that stretch. He tightened the robe sash around him, thinking back. Yes, it had been hard. And yet at the same time, it had also been strangely exhilarating. On Wayland, he had personally commanded a whole city-state, one with a larger population than that which nestled beneath the High Castle. But there, he'd long since gone beyond the need to impose his will by force. The humans and Sadans had submitted to his authority early on. Even the Minor Ishi, with their lingering resentment of his rule, had learned to obey his orders without question. The Imperials, as well as the people of Jomark, were going to have to learn that same lesson. Back when Grand Admiral Thrawn had first goaded Sabaoth into his alliance, he'd implied that Sabaoth had been too long without a real challenge. Perhaps the Grand Admiral had also secretly thought that this challenge of running the Empire's war would prove too much for a single Jedi Master to handle. Sabaoth smiled tightly in the darkness. If that was what the glowing-eyed Grand Admiral thought, he was going to be in for a surprise. Because when Luke Skywalker finally got here, Sabaoth would face perhaps the most subtle challenge of his life. To bend and twist another Jedi to his will, without the other even being aware of what was happening to him. And when he'd succeeded, there would be two of them. And who could tell what might be possible then? The messenger had dismounted from his thumper and was standing beside the gate now. His sense, that of a man prepared to wait the convenience of his master, no matter how long that wait might be. That was good. Exactly the proper attitude. giving his robe sash one final tug. Sabaoth headed through the maze of darkened rooms toward the door, to hear what his new subjects wished to tell him.
Chapter 7.
With a delicacy that always seemed so incongruous in a being his size, Chewbacca maneuvered the Falcon into his precisely selected orbital slot above the lush green moon of Endor. Rumbling under his breath, he switched over the power linkages and cut the engines back to standby. Seated in the co-pilot seat, Leia took a deep breath, wincing as one of the twins kicked her from inside.
"Doesn't look like Kabarak's here yet,"
she commented, realizing even as she said it how superfluous the comment was. She'd been watching the sensors from the moment they dropped out of lightspeed, and given there was no other ships anywhere in the system, there wasn't much chance that they could have missed him. But with the familiar engine roar now cut back down to a whisper, the silence felt strange, and even a little eerie to her. Chewbacca growled a question.
"We wait, I guess," Leia shrugged. "Actually, we're almost a day early. We got here faster than I'd expected."
Chewbacca turned back to his board, growling his own interpretation of the Nogri's absence.
"Oh, come on," Leia chided him. "If he'd decided to make this meeting into a trap, don't you think they'd have had a couple of Star Destroyers and an Interdictor Cruiser waiting to meet us?"
"Your Highness,"
3PO's voice called from down the tunnel.
"I'm sorry to disturb you, but I believe I've located the fault in the Carbonti countermeasures package. Could you ask Chewbacca to step back for a moment?"
Leia raised her eyebrows in mild surprise as she looked at Chewbacca. As was depressingly normal with the Falcon, several bits of equipment had gone out early in the flight from Coruscant. Up to his elbows with more important repairs, Chewbacca had assigned the relatively low-priority work on the Carbonti to 3PO. Leia had no objections, though given the results the last time 3PO had tried to work on the Falcon, she hadn't expected very much to come of it.
"We'll make a repair droid out of him yet,"
she said to Chewbacca.
"Your influence, no doubt."
The Wookiee snorted his opinion of that as he got out of the pilot seat and headed back to see what 3PO had found. The cockpit door slid open, closed again behind him, leaving the cockpit that much quieter.
"You see that planet down there, my dears?" Leia murmured, rubbing her belly gently. "That's Endor, where the Rebel Alliance finally triumphed over the Empire, and the New Republic began."
Or at least, she amended silently to herself, that was what the histories someday would say, that the death of the Empire occurred at Endor, with all the rest of it merely a mopping-up action. A mopping-up action which had lasted 5 years so far, and could wind up lasting another 20, the way things were going. She let her eyes drift across the brilliant, mottled green world turning slowly beneath them, wondering yet again why she'd chosen this place for her rendezvous with Kabarak. True, it was a system that practically every being in both the Republic and Imperial sections of the galaxy had heard of and knew how to find. And with the major planes of contention long gone from this sector, it was a quiet enough place for two ships to meet. But there were memories here, too, some of which Leia would just as soon not bring to mind. Before they'd triumphed, they'd very nearly lost everything. From down the tunnel, Chewbacca roared a question.
"Hang on, I'll check,"
Leia called back. Leaning over the board, she keyed a switch.
"It reads standby/modulo,
she reported.
"Wait a minute, now it reads system ready. Do you want me to..."
And abruptly, without any warning, a black curtain seemed to drop across her vision. Slowly, she became aware that there was a metallic voice calling to her.
"Your Highness,"
it said over and over again.
"Your Highness, can you hear me? Please, Your Highness, can you hear me?"
She opened her eyes, vaguely surprised to discover they were closed, to find Chewbacca leaning over her with an open med pack gripped in one huge hand, and agitated 3PO hovering like a nervous mother bird behind him.
"I'm all right," she managed. What happened?
You shouted for help,
3PO put in before Chewbacca could answer.
At least we thought it was for help. You were brief and rather incoherent.
I don't doubt it, Leia told him.
It was starting to come back now, like moonlight through the edge of a cloud. The menace, the rage, the hatred, the despair.
You didn't feel it, did you?
She asked Chewbacca. He growled a negative, watching her closely.
I felt nothing either,
3PO put in. Leia shook her head.
I don't know what it could have been. One minute I was sitting there, and the next...
She broke off, a sudden horrible thought striking her.
Chewie, where does this orbit take us? Does it ever pass through the position where the Death Star blew up?
Chewbacca stared at her for a moment, rumbling something deep in his throat. Then shifting the medpack to his other hand, he reached past her to key the computer. The answer came almost immediately.
5 minutes ago, Leia murmured, feeling cold. That would be just about right, wouldn't it?
Chewbacca growled an affirmative. Then a question.
I really don't know, she had to admit. It sounds a little like something Luke went through on... during his Jedi training.
She amended, remembering just in time that Luke still wanted Dagobah's significance to be kept a secret.
But he saw a vision. All I felt was... I don't know. It was anger and bitterness. But at the same time, there was something almost sad about it. No, sad isn't the right word.
She shook her head, sudden tears welling inexplicably up in her eyes.
I don't know. Look, I'm all right. You two can go on back to what you were doing.
Chewbacca rumbled under his breath again, clearly not convinced. But he said nothing else as he closed the medpack and pushed past 3PO. The cockpit door slid open for him. With the proverbial Wookiee disdain for subtlety, he locked it in that position before disappearing down the tunnel into the main body of the ship. Leia focused on 3PO.
You two,
she told him.
Go on. You still have work to do back there. I'm all right, really.
Well, very well, Your Highness. If you're certain...
I am. Go on, scat.
3PO dithered another moment, then obediently shuffled out of the cockpit. And the silence resumed. A silence that was thicker somehow than it had been before, and much darker. Leia set her teeth firmly together.
I will not be intimidated,
she said aloud to the silence.
Not here, not anywhere.
The silence didn't reply. After a minute, Leia reached over to the board and keyed in a course alteration that would keep them from again passing through the spot where the Emperor had died. Refusing to be intimidated, after all, didn't mean deliberately asking for trouble. And after that, there was nothing left to do but wait and wonder if Kabarak would indeed come. The topmost bit of the walled city, Illic, poked through the clutching trees of the jungle pressing tightly around it, looking to Han, for all the world, like some sort of dome-topped, silver-skinned droid drowning in a sea of green quicksand.
Any idea how we land on that thing?
He asked.
Probably through those vents near the top,
Lando said, pointing at the Lady Luck's main display.
They read large enough for anything up to about W-class space barge to get into.
Han nodded, fingers plucking restlessly at the soft armrest of his co-pilot seat. There weren't a lot of things in the galaxy that could make him nervous, but having to sit there while someone else made a tricky landing was one of them.
This is even a crazier place to live than that nomad city thing of yours, he growled.
No argument from me,
Lando agreed, adjusting their altitude a bit, several seconds later than Han would have done it.
At least on Niklon, we don't have to worry about getting eaten by some exotic plant. But that's economics for you. At last count, there were 8 cities in this part of New Kov, and 2 more being built.
Han grimaced. And all because of those same exotic plants. Or to be specific, the exotic biomolecules that could be harvested from them. The Kavis seemed to think the profit was worth having to live in armored cities all the time. No one knew what the plants thought about it.
"They're still crazy," he said. "Watch out. They may have magnetic airlocks on those entrance ducts."
Lando gave him a patient look.
"Will you relax? I have flown ships before, you know."
"Yeah,"
Han muttered, setting his teeth together. He settled in to suffer through the landing. It wasn't as bad as he'd expected. Lando got his clearance from control and guided the Lady Luck with reasonable skill into the flaring maw of one of the entrance ducts, following the curved pipe down and inward to a brightly lit landing area just beneath the transparisteel dome that topped the city walls. Inbound customs were a mere formality, though given the planet's dependence on exports, the outbound scrutiny would probably be a lot tighter. They were officially welcomed to Illic by a professional greeter with a professional smile, given a data card with maps of the city and surrounding territory, and then turned loose.
"That wasn't so hard,"
Lando commented, as they rode a sliding spiral ramp down through the spacious open center. At each level, walkways led outward from the ramp to the market, administrative, and living areas of the city.
"Where are we supposed to be meeting Luke?"
3 more levels down, in one of the entertainment districts,"
Han told him.
"The Imperial Library didn't have much detail on this place, but it did mention a little tap calf called the Mishra, attached to some half-sized version they've got of the old Grandis Mon Theater on Coruscant. I got the impression it was kind of a watering hole for local big shots."
"Sounds like a good place to meet,"
Lando agreed. He threw Han a sideways look.
"So, you ready to show me the hook yet?"
Han frowned.
"Hook?
Come on, you old pirate," Lando snorted. "You pick me up at Slew's van. Ask for a lift out the new carve. Send Luke on ahead for this cloak and blade rendezvous. And you expect me to believe you're just gonna wave goodbye now and let me go back to Nicklon?"
Han gave his friend his best wounded look.
"Come on, Lando."
"The hook hand. Let me see the hook."
Han sighed theatrically.
"There isn't any hook, Lando," he said. "You can leave for Nicklon anytime you want to. Of course," he added casually, "if you hung around a little and gave us a hand, you might be able to work a deal here to unload any spare metals you had lying around. Stockpile of hephredium or something?"
Carefully keeping his eyes forward, he could still feel the heat of Lando's glare.
"Luke told you about that, didn't he?"
Lando demanded.
Han shrugged. "He might have mentioned it,"
he conceded. Lando hissed between clenched teeth.
"I'm gonna strangle him," he announced. "Jedi or not, I'm gonna strangle him."
Come on, Lando,"
Han soothed.
"You hang around a couple of days, you listen to people's jabberings, you maybe dig us out a lead or two about what Phalia's got going here, and that's it. You go home and back your mining operation, and we never bother you again."
"I've heard that before,"
Lando countered, but Han could hear the resignation in his voice.
"What makes you think Phalia's got contacts on Nukav?"
"Because during the war, this was the only place his Bothans ever seemed to care about defending."
He broke off, grabbing Lando's arm and turning both of them hard to the right toward the central column of the spiral walkway.
"What?"
Lando managed.
"Quiet,"
Han hissed, trying to simultaneously hide his face and still watch the figure he'd spotted leaving the ramp one level down.
"That Bothan down there, to the left. See him?"
Lando turned slightly, peering in the indicated direction out of the corner of his eye.
"What about him?"
"It's Tav Brelia, one of Phalia's top aides."
"You're kidding,"
Lando said, frowning down at the alien.
"How can you tell?"
"That neck piece he wears. Some kind of family crest or something. I've seen it dozens of times at council meetings."
Han chewed at his lip, trying to think. If that really was Brelia over there, finding out what he was up to could save them a lot of time. But Luke was probably sitting in the tap cap downstairs right now waiting for them.
"I'm gonna follow him,"
he told Lando, shoving his data pad and the city map into the other's hands.
"You head down to the Mishra, grab Luke and catch up with me."
"But..."
"If you're not with me in an hour, I'll try calling on the comm link."
Han cut him off, stepping toward the outside of the ramp. They were nearly to the Bothans level now.
Don't call me. I might be someplace I wouldn't want a call beep going off.
He stepped off the ramp onto the walkway.
Good luck,
Lando called softly after him. There was a good scattering of aliens among the humans wandering around Illic, but Brelia's cream-colored fur stood out of the crowd enough to make him easy to follow, which was just as well. If Han could recognize the Bothan could probably recognize him right back, and it would be risky to have to get too close. Luckily, the alien didn't seem to even consider the possibility that anyone might be following him. He kept up a steady pace, never turning around as he headed past cross streets and shops and atria toward the outer city wall. Han stayed with him, wishing he hadn't been so quick to give the city map to Lando. It might have been nice to have some idea where he was going. They passed through one final atrium and reached a section of warehouse-type structures abutting a vast mural that seemed to have been painted directly on the inner city wall. Brelia went straight to one of the buildings near the mural and disappeared through the front door. Han ducked into a convenient doorway about 30 meters down the street from the warehouse. The door Brelia had gone through, he could see, carried the faded sign Amethyst Shipping and Storage above it.
I just hope it's on the map,
he muttered under his breath, pulling his comlink from his belt.
It is.
A woman's voice came softly from behind him. Han froze.
Hello?
He asked tentatively.
Hello,
she said back.
Turn around, please. Slowly, of course.
Han did as ordered, the comlink still in hand.
If this is a robbery...
Don't be silly.
The woman was short and slender, perhaps 10 years older than him, with close-cut graying hair and a thin face, which under other circumstances would look friendly enough. The blaster pointed his direction was some unfamiliar knockoff of a Blastech DL-18, not nearly as powerful as his own DL-44, but under the circumstances the difference didn't matter a whole lot.
Put the comlink on the ground, she continued. Your blaster too, as long as you're down there.
Silently, Han crouched down, drawing his weapon out with exaggerated caution. Under cover of the motion, with most of her attention hopefully on the blaster, he flicked on the comlink, laying both on the ground. He straightened and took a step back, just to prove that he knew the proper procedure for prisoners.
Now what?
You seem interested in the little get-together yonder,
she said, stooping to retrieve the blaster and comlink.
Perhaps you'd like a guided tour.
That would be great,
Han told her, raising his hands and hoping that she wouldn't think to look at the comlink before putting it away in one of the pockets in her jumpsuit. She didn't look at it. She did, however, shut it off.
I think I'm insulted,
she said mildly.
That has to be the oldest trick on the list.
Han shrugged, determined to maintain at least a little dignity here.
I didn't have time to come up with any new ones.
Apology accepted. Come on, let's go. And lower your hands. We don't want any passerby wondering now, do we?
Of course not,
Han said, dropping his hands to his sides. They were halfway to the amethyst, when, off in the distance, a siren began wailing. It was, Luke thought, as he looked around the Mishra, almost like an inverted replaying of his first visit to the Mos Eisley Cantina on Tatooine all those years ago. True, the Mishra was light years more sophisticated than that dilapidated place had been, with a correspondingly more upscale clientele. But the bar and tables were crowded with the same wide assortment of humans and aliens. The smells and sounds were equally variegated, and the band off in the corner was playing similar music. A style, obviously, that had been carefully tailored to appeal to a multitude of different races. There was one other difference, too. Crowded though the place might be, the patrons were leaving Luke a respectful amount of room at the bar. He took a sip of his drink, a local variant of the hot chocolate Lando had introduced him to, this one with a touch of mint, and glanced over at the entrance. Han and Lando should have been only a couple of hours behind him, which meant they could be walking in at any minute. He hoped so, anyway. He'd understood Han's reasons for wanting the two ships to come into Illic separately, but with all the threats that seemed to be hanging over the New Republic, They couldn't really afford to waste time. He took another sip, and from behind him came an inhuman bellow. He spun around, hand automatically yanking his lightsaber from his belt, as the sound of a chair crashing over backwards added an exclamation point to the bellow. 5 meters away from him, in the middle of a circle of frozen patrons, a Barabel and a Rodian stood facing each other over a table, both with blasters drawn.
"No blasters! No blasters!"
an SE-4 servant droid called, waving his arms for emphasis as he scuttled toward the confrontation. In the flick of an eye, the Barabel shifted aim and blew the droid apart, bringing his blaster back to bear on the Rodian before the other could react.
"Hey!" the bartender said indignantly. "That's gonna cost you!"
"Shut up!"
the Barabel cut him off with a snarl.
"Rodian will pay you after he pay me."
The Rodian drew himself up to his full height, which still left him a good half meter shorter than his opponent, and spat something in a language Luke didn't understand.
"You lie!"
the Barabel spat back.
"You cheat! I know!"
the Rodian said something else.
"You no like?"
the Barabel countered, his voice haughty.
"You do anyway. I call on Jedi for judgment."
Every eye in the TAPCAF had been riveted to the confrontation. Now, in almost perfect unison, the gazes turned to Luke.
"What?"
he asked cautiously.
"He wants you to settle the dispute,"
the bartender said, relief evident in his voice. A relief that Luke himself was far from feeling.
"Me?"
the bartender gave him a strange look.
"You're the Jedi Knight Luke Skywalker, aren't you?"
he asked, gesturing at the lightsaber in Luke's hand.
Yes, Luke admitted.
"Well then,"
the bartender concluded, waving a hand toward the disputants. Except that, Jedi or no Jedi, Luke didn't have a drop of legal authority here. He opened his mouth to tell the bartender that, and then took another look into the other's eyes. Slowly, he turned back around, the excuses sticking unsaid in his throat. It wasn't just the bartender he saw. Everyone in the TAPCAF, it seemed, was looking at him with pretty much the same expression. An expression of expectation and trust. Trust in the judgment of a Jedi. Taking a quiet breath, sternly ordering his pounding heart to calm down, he started through the crowd toward the confrontation. Ben Kenobi had introduced him to the Force. Yoda had taught him how to use the Force for self-control and self-defense. Neither had ever taught him anything about mediating arguments.
"All right," he said as he reached the table. "The first thing you're going to do, both of you, is put away your weapons."
"Who first?"
the Barabel demanded.
"Rodians collect bounty. He shoot if I disarm."
This was certainly getting off to a great start. Suppressing a sigh, Luke ignited his lightsaber, holding it out so that the brilliant green blade was directly between the opposing blasters.
"No one is going to shoot anyone," he said flatly. "Put them away."
Silently, the Barabel complied. The Rodian hesitated a second longer, then followed suit.
"Now, tell me the problem,"
Luke said, shutting down the lightsaber, but keeping it ready in his hand.
"He hire me for tracking job,"
the Barabel said, jabbing a keratin-plated finger at the Rodian.
"I do what he say, but he no pay me."
The Rodian said something indignant sounding.
"Just a minute. We'll get to you,"
Luke told him, wondering how he was going to handle that part of the cross-examination.
"What sort of job was it?"
"He ask me hunt animal nest for him,"
the Barabel said.
"Animals bothering little ships, eating at sides. I do what he say. He burn animal nest, get money. But then he pay me in no good money."
He gestured down at a now scattered pile of gold-colored metal chips. Luke picked one up. It was small and triangular, with an intricate pattern of lines in the center and inscribed with a small 100 in each corner.
"Anyone ever see this currency before?"
he called, holding it up.
"It's new imperial script,"
someone dressed in an expensive business coat said, with thinly veiled contempt.
"You can only spend it on imperial-held worlds and stations."
Luke grimaced. Another reminder, if he'd needed one, that the war for control of the galaxy was far from over.
"Did you tell him beforehand that you'd be paying in this?"
he asked the Rhodian. The other said something in his own language. Luke glanced around the circle, wondering if asking for a translator would diminish his perceived status here.
"He says that that was how he was paid,"
a familiar voice said. And Luke turned to see Lando ease his way to the front of the crowd.
"Says he argued about it, but he didn't have any choice in the matter."
"That is how the Empire's been doing business lately,"
someone in the crowd offered.
"At least around here."
The Barabel spun toward the other.
"I no want your judgment,"
he snarled.
"Only Jedi give judgment."
"All right, calm down,"
Luke told him, fingering the chit and wondering what he was going to do. If this really was the way the Rhodian had been paid.
"Is there any way to convert these into something else?"
he asked the Rhodian. The other answered.
"He says no," Lando translated.
"You can use them for goods and services on Imperial worlds, but since no one in the New Republic will take them, there's no official rate of exchange."
"Right," Luke said dryly. He might not have Lando's experience in under-the-plate operations, but he hadn't been born yesterday either.
"So what's the unofficial exchange rate?"
"No idea, actually,"
Lando said, looking around the crowd.
"Must be someone here who works both sides of the street, though."
He raised his voice.
"Anyone here do business with the Empire?"
If they did, they were keeping quiet about it.
"Shy, aren't they?"
Luke murmured.
"About admitting Imperial dealings to a Jedi?"
Lando countered.
"I'd be shy, too."
Luke nodded, feeling a sinking sense in the pit of his stomach as he studied the Rhodian's tapir-like snout and passive, multifaceted eyes. He'd hoped that he could simply smooth out the problem and thereby avoid the need to pass any kind of real judgment. Now he had no choice but to rule on whether the Rhodian was in fact deliberately trying to cheat his partner. Closing his eyes down to slits, he composed his mind and stretched out his senses. It was a long shot, he knew, but most species showed subtle psychological changes when under stress. If the Rhodian was lying about the payment, and if he thought that Luke's Jedi skills could catch him at it, he might react enough to incriminate himself. But even as Luke ran through the sensory enhancement techniques, something else caught his attention. It was an odor. A faint whiff of Karababa Tabak and Armudu. The same combination Lando had called his attention to on the Sluis Van space station. Luke opened his eyes and looked around the crowd.
"Niles Ferrier," he called. "Will you step forward, please?"
There was a long pause, punctuated only by Lando's sudden hissing intake of air at Ferrier's name. Then, with a rustle of movement from one side of the circle, a familiar, bulky figure pushed his way to the front.
"What do you want?"
he demanded, his hand resting on the butt of his holstered blaster.
"I need to know the unofficial exchange rate between Imperial and New Republic currencies," Luke said. "I thought perhaps you could tell me what it is."
Ferrier studied him with ill-concealed scorn.
"This is your problem, Jedi. Leave me out of it."
There was a low rumble of displeasure from the crowd. Luke didn't reply, but held Ferrier in a level gaze. And after a moment, the other's lip twisted.
"The last time I did business on the other side, we settled on a 5-4 Empire-Republic conversion,"
he growled.
"Thank you,"
Luke said.
"That seems straightforward enough, then,"
he continued, turning to the Rhodian.
"Pay your associate with New Republic currency at a 5-4 exchange rate, and take the Empire script back for the next time you work in their territory."
The Rhodian spat something.
"That is lie!"
the Barabel snarled back.
"He says he doesn't have enough in New Republic currency,"
Lando translated.
Knowing Rodians, I'd tend to agree with the Beribel.
Perhaps. Luke stared hard into the Rodian's faceted eyes.
Perhaps not. But there might be another way.
He looked back at Ferrier, raised his eyebrows questioningly.
The other was sharp, all right.
Don't even think it, Jedi,
he warned.
Why not?
Luke asked. You work both sides of the border. You're more likely to be able to spend Imperial script than the Beribel could.
Suppose I don't want to,
Ferrier countered.
Suppose I don't plan to go back any time soon. Or maybe I don't want to get caught with that much Imperial script on me. Fix it yourself, Jedi. I don't owe you any favors.
The Beribel whirled on him.
You talk respect,
he snarled.
He is Jedi. You talk respect.
A low rumble of agreement rippled through the crowd.
Better listen to him, Lando advised. I don't think you want to get in a fight here, especially not with a Beribel. They've always had a soft spot for Jedi.
Yeah, right behind their snouts,
Ferrier retorted. But his eyes were flicking around the crowd now, and Luke caught the subtle shift in his sense as he began to realize just how much in the minority his opinion of Luke was. Or perhaps he was realizing that winding up in the middle of an official flap might buy him more attention than he really wanted to have. Luke waited, watching the other's sense flicker with uncertainty, waiting for him to change his mind. When it happened quickly.
All right, but it'll have to be a 5-3 exchange,
Ferrier insisted.
The 5-4 was a fluke. No telling if I'll ever get that again. It is cheat,
the Beribel declared.
I deserve more from Rodian.
Yes, you do, Luke agreed. But under the circumstances, this is probably the best you're going to get.
He looked at the Rodian.
If it helps any, he added to the Beribel, remember that you can pass a warning to the rest of your people about dealing with this particular Rodian. Not being able to hire expert Beribel hunters will hurt him far more in the long run than he might cost you now.
The Beribel made a grating noise that was probably the equivalent of a laugh.
Jedi speak truth,
he said.
Punishment is good.
Luke braced himself. This part the Beribel wasn't going to be nearly so happy about.
You will, however, have to pay for the repair of the droid you shot.
Whatever the Rodian said or did, he is not responsible for that.
The Beribel stared at Luke, his needle teeth making small, tight, biting motions.
Luke returned the cold gaze, senses alert to the Force for any intimation of attack.
Jedi, again speak truth,
the alien said at last, reluctantly but firmly.
I accept judgment.
Luke let out a quiet sigh of relief.
Then the matter is closed, he said.
He looked at Ferrier, then raised his lightsaber to his forehead in salute to the two aliens, and turned away.
Nicely done,
Lando murmured in his ear as the crowd began to break up.
Thanks,
Luke murmured, his mouth dry. It worked all right, but it had been more luck than skill, and he knew it. If Ferrier hadn't been there, or if the ship thief hadn't decided to back down, Luke had no idea how he would have solved the dispute. Leia and her diplomatic training would have done better than he had. Even Han and his long experience at hard bargaining would have done as well. It was an aspect of Jedi responsibility that he'd never considered before. But it was one he'd better start thinking about, and fast.
Han's following one of Felia's Bothan pals up on level 4,
Lando was saying as they moved through the crowd toward the exit.
Spotted him from the west central ramp and sent me to...
He stopped short. From outside the Mishra, the sound of wailing sirens had started.
I wonder what that is, he said, a touch of uneasiness in his voice.
It's an alarm,
one of the Tapcalf patrons said, his forehead wrinkled in concentration as he listened. The pitch of the siren changed. Changed again.
It's a raid.
A raid?
Luke frowned. He hadn't heard of any pirate activity in the sector. Who's raiding you?
Who else?
The man retorted.
The Empire.
Luke looked at Lando.
Uh-oh,
he said quietly.
Yeah, Lando agreed. Come on.
They left the Mishra and headed out into the wide avenue. Oddly enough, there were no signs of the panic Luke would have expected to find. On the contrary, the citizens of Illex seemed to be continuing about their daily business as if nothing untoward was happening.
Maybe they don't realize what's going on?
He suggested doubtfully as they headed for one of the spiral ramps.
Or else they've got a quiet agreement with the Empire,
Lando countered sourly.
Maybe the leadership finds it politically handy to align themselves with the New Republic, but they also want to keep in the Empire's good graces. Since they can't pay anything as overt as tribute, they instead let the Imperials come in every so often and raid their stocks of refined biomolecules. I've seen that sort of thing done before.
Luke looked around at the unconcerned crowds. Only this time it might backfire on them.
Like if the Imperials spot the Lady Luck and your X-Wing on the landing records.
Right. Where did you say Han was?
Last I saw, he was on level 4, heading west,
Lando said, digging out his comlink.
He told me not to call him, but I think this qualifies as an unforeseen circumstance.
Wait a minute, Luke stopped him. If he's anywhere near this aid of Phalia's, and if Phalia is working some kind of deal with the Empire...
You're right,
Lando swore under his breath as he put the comlink away.
So what do we do?
They'd reached the ramp now and stepped onto the section spiraling upward. I'll go find Han, Luke said. You get up to the landing area and see what's happening. If the Imperials haven't actually landed yet, you might be able to get into the air control computer and erase us from the list. R2 can help if you can get him out of my X-Wing and over to a terminal without being caught.
I'll give it a try.
Okay. A stray memory flicked through Luke's mind. I don't suppose the Lady Luck's equipped with one of those full-rig slave circuits you talked about back on Niklon, is it?
Lando shook his head.
It's rigged, but only with a simple homing setup. Nothing much more than straight-line motion and a little maneuvering. It'd never be able to get to me through the middle of an enclosed city like this.
And even if it could, Luke had to admit, it wouldn't do them much good. Short of blasting a huge hole through the outer wall, the only way out of Illic for anything the size of a spaceship was through the exit ducts above the landing area. It was just a thought, he said.
Here's where Han got off, Lando said, pointing. He headed that way.
Right. Luke stepped off the ramp. See you soon. Be careful.
You too.
Chapter 8.
The graying woman took Han to a small office-type room in the Amethyst building, turned him over to a couple of other guard types there, and disappeared with his blaster, comlink, and ID in hand. Han tried once or twice to strike up a conversation with the guards, got no response from either of them, and had just about resigned himself to sitting quietly, listening to the sirens outside, when the woman returned. Accompanied by another taller woman with the unmistakable air of authority about her.
Good day to you,
the tall woman said, nodding at Han.
Captain Han Solo, I believe.
With his ID in her hand, there didn't seem much point in denying it.
That's right, he said.
We're honored by your visit,
she said, her tone putting a slightly sardonic edge to the polite words.
Though a bit surprised by it.
I don't know why. The visit was your idea,
Han countered.
You always pick people up off the street like this?
Just special ones.
The tall woman's eyebrows lifted slightly.
You want to tell me who you are and who sent you?
Han frowned.
What do you mean, who am I? You've got my ID right there.
Yes, I do.
The woman nodded, turning the card over in her hand.
But there's some difference of opinion as to whether or not it's genuine.
She looked out the door and beckoned. And Tav Brelia stepped past her into the room.
I was right,
the Bothan said, his cream-colored fur rippling in an unfamiliar pattern.
As I told you when I first saw his ID, he is an imposter, almost certainly an Imperial spy.
What?
Han stared at him, the whole situation tilting slightly off vertical. He looked at the alien's neckpiece. It was Tav Brelia, all right.
What did you call me?
You're an Imperial spy,
Brelia repeated, his fur rippling again.
Come to destroy our friendship, or even to kill us all, but you'll never live to report back to your masters.
He turned to the tall woman.
You must destroy him at once, Sina,
he urged,
before he has a chance to summon your enemies here.
Let's not do anything rash, Council Aide Brelia,
Sina soothed.
Irenez has a good picket screen in position.
She looked at Han.
Would you care to respond to the Council Aide's accusations?
We have no interest in the ravings of an Imperial spy,
Brelia insisted before Han could speak.
On the contrary, Council Aide,
Sina countered.
Around here we have an interest in a great many things.
She turned back to Han, lifted his ID.
Do you have any proof other than this that you're who you claim to be?
It doesn't matter who he is,
Brelia jumped in again, his voice starting to sound a little strained.
He's seen you, and he must certainly know that we have some kind of arrangement. Whether he's from the Empire or the New Republic is irrelevant. Both are your enemies, and both would use such information against you.
Sina's eyebrows lifted again.
So now his identity doesn't matter,
she said coolly.
Does that mean you're no longer certain he's an imposter?
Brelia's fur rippled again. Clearly he wasn't as quick on his verbal feet as his boss.
He's a very close likeness,
the other muttered.
Though a proper dissection would quickly establish for certain who he is.
Sina smiled slightly, but it was a smile of understanding, not of humor. And suddenly, Han realized that the confrontation had been as much a test of Brelia as it had been of him. And if Sina's expression was anything to go by, the Bothan had just flunked it.
I'll keep that recommendation in mind,
she told him dryly. There was a soft beep, and the gray-haired woman pulled out a comlink and spoke quietly into it. She listened, spoke again, and looked up at Sina.
Picket line reports another man approaching,
she said.
Medium build, dark blonde hair, dressed in black.
She threw a glance at Brelia.
And carrying what appears to be a lightsaber.
Sina looked at Brelia too.
I believe that ends the discussion,
she said.
Have one of the pickets meet him, Irenez, and ask him if he'll join us. Make it clear that's a request, not an order. Then return Captain Solo's weapon and equipment to him.
She turned to Han, nodded gravely to him as she returned his ID.
My apologies, Captain. You understand we have to be cautious, particularly given the coincidence of this.
She gestured toward the outside wall. Han frowned, wondering what she meant. Then he got it. She was indicating the sirens still wailing outside.
No problem, he assured her. What are the sirens for, anyway?
It's an Imperial raid,
Irenez said, handing him his blaster and comlink. Han froze.
A raid?
It's no big deal,
Sina assured him.
They come by every few months and take a percentage of the refined biomolecules that have been packaged for export. It's a covert form of taxation the city governments have worked out with them. Don't worry, they never come any farther in than the landing level.
Yeah, well, they may change the routine a little this time,
Han growled, flicking on his comlink. He half expected someone to try to stop him, but no one even twitched.
Luke?
I'm here, Han,
the younger man's voice came back.
My escort tells me I'm being brought to where you are. You all right?
Just a little misunderstanding. Better get in here fast. We got company.
Right.
Han shut off the comlink. Sina and Irenez, he saw, had meanwhile been having a quiet conversation of their own.
If you're as touchy about Imperials as Brelia implied, you might want to find a hole to disappear into,
he advised.
Our escape route's ready,
Sina assured him as Irenez left the room.
The question is what to do with you and your friend.
You can't just turn them loose,
Brelia insisted, trying one last time.
You know full well that if the New Republic learns about you...
The commander is being notified. Cena cut him off. He'll decide.
But...
That's all, Council Aide. She cut him off again, her voice suddenly hard.
Join the others at the lift shaft. You'll accompany me on my ship.
Brelia threw one last unreadable look at Han, then silently left the room.
Who's this commander of yours?
Han asked.
I can't tell you that.
Cena studied him a moment.
Don't worry, though. Despite what Brelia said, we're not enemies of the New Republic. At least, not at the moment.
Oh, Han said. Great.
There was the sound of footsteps from the hallway outside. A few seconds later, accompanied by two young men with holstered blasters, Luke stepped into the room.
Han,
Luke greeted his friend, giving Cena a quick once-over.
You all right?
I'm fine, Han assured him. Like I said, a little misunderstanding. The lady here... Cena...
He paused expectantly.
Let's just leave it at Cena for now, she said.
Ah,
Han said. He'd hoped to get her last name, but clearly she wasn't in the habit of giving it out.
Anyway, Cena thought I was an Imperial spy. And speaking of Imperials...
I know,
Luke nodded.
Lando's gone up to see if he can clear our ships from the landing record.
He won't be able to.
Han shook his head.
Not in time, and they're bound to pull the landing list.
Luke nodded agreement.
Then we'd better get up there.
Unless you'd all rather come with us, Cena offered. There's plenty of room on our ship, and it's hidden away where they won't find it.
Thanks, but no,
Han said. He wasn't about to go off with these people until he knew a lot more about them, whose side they were on for starters.
Lando won't want to leave his ship.
And I need to get my droid back,
Luke added. Irina slipped back into the room.
Everyone's on their way down, and the ship's being prepped,
she told Cena.
And I got through to the commander.
She handed the tall woman a data pad. Cena glanced at it, nodded, and turned back to Han.
There's a service shaft near here that opens up into the west edge of the landing area, she told him. I doubt the Imperials know about it. It's not on any of the standard city maps. Irenaeus will guide you up there and give you what help she can.
That's really not necessary, Han told her.
Cena held up the data pad.
The commander has instructed me to give you whatever aid you require, she said firmly. I'd appreciate it if you'd allow me to carry out my orders.
Han looked at Luke, raised his eyebrows. Luke shrugged slightly in return. If there was treachery in the offer, his Jedi senses were picking it up.
Fine, she can tag along, he said. Let's go.
Good luck,
Cena said, and disappeared out the door. Irina gestured to the door after her.
This way, gentlemen.
The service shaft was a combination stairway and lift car tube set into the outer city wall. Its entrance almost invisible against the swirling pattern of that section of the mural. The lift car itself was nowhere to be seen. Probably, Han decided, still ferrying Cena's group to wherever it was they'd stashed their ship. With Irina's in the lead, they started up the stairs. It was only three levels up to the landing area, but three levels in a city with Illex high-ceilinged layout translated into a lot of stairs. The first level ran to 53 steps. After that, Han stopped counting. By the time they slipped through another disguised door into the landing area and took cover behind a massive diagnostic analyzer, his legs were beginning to tremble with fatigue. Irina's, in contrast, wasn't even breathing hard.
Now what?
Luke asked, looking cautiously around the analyzer. He wasn't breathing hard either.
Let's find Lando,
Han said, pulling out his comm link and thumbing his call.
Lando!
Right here.
The other's whispered voice came back instantly.
Where are you?
West end of the landing area. About 20 meters from Luke's X-Wing. How about you?
About 90 degrees away from you, toward the south. I'm behind a stack of shipping boxes. There's a stormtrooper standing guard about 5 meters away. So I'm sort of stuck here.
What sort of trouble are we looking at?
It looks like a full-fledged task force. I saw three dropships come in, and I think there were one or two on the ground when I got here. If they were fully loaded, that translates to 160 to 200 men.